On this special edition of The Right Stuff, I'll be talking to three members of the writing community who are either active duty members of the armed forces or they're retired. And they're going to give a special perspective of what it means to be warriors for our country, warriors for God, and writing. And that's coming up next right here on this special edition of The Right Stuff.
You are listening to The Best. The only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right, you're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm your first country in all veterans all over the world, and we're going to be talking to veterans who are also authors. And I think this is a unique perspective of the craft of writing because they're able to take realism and actually put it into their writing, or perhaps not. We'll find out. My distinguished panel consists of three authors and then our reviewer, Peter Young Husband. The first of our panel is Tim Monahan. He is the author of the book No Greater Love, an Afghan Memoir. Our second panelist is Travis Perry, and he is an author, and you know I'm a cheerleader of Travis Perry, and I have a number of his books, and he is the proprietor and owner of the Bear Publications. And we also have Jeff Wilson. He is the author of War Torn, as well as several other best-selling novels out there as well. And then most of you already know Peter Young Husband, my advisor to The Right Stuff, and he is part of Christian Fiction Review Guru website, where if you want anything about Christian speculative fiction or those who are Christians who write speculative fiction, you definitely want to go to his blog and listen and hear. Not listen, but read the reviews of all the books that he's done. So we're having just a wonderful time on our show today with our panel. You are invited to call in at our number 929-477-1965. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to our warriors for writing and our warriors for God, coming up next in just a few moments.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on The Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com. Or order a print issue on magcloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
Hi, and welcome back to our special edition of The Right Stuff. Again, I'm your host, Parker J, and this is PJC Media Worldwide 104.5. I'm so glad you're here. We are having a tribute to our veterans today because Veterans Day is tomorrow, and I want to make sure that we showcase veterans who are also writers, who have also been in the armed forces. And so we have a wonderful panel with us today. And so before I introduce our panel, I want to introduce the gentleman who brought this panel together. Those of you already know him as Peter Young Husband, and he has been just a massive support to me as the host of this show for the last 5 years, as well as to many of you out there who have had your books read and reviewed by Peter. And Peter, let me introduce you real quick to our listeners out there, because we don't always get a chance to hear you, so now we get a chance to hear that wonderful Australian accent. So you could go ahead and tell us who you are for those of you who may be just listening to you for the first time.
Well, thanks, Parker. I don't have a particular usual Aussie accent, but yes, it is an Aussie accent. I started reviewing books 3 or 4 years ago on Amazon, and I didn't think much of it, except that I knew that, you know, reviews did a lot of things to authors. And it was only through an Aussie author whose books I reviewed, and he said to me that I should do a blog because the reviews were a little bit long, and he said that that makes it even better because he said you add some analysis to the review rather than just saying it's a great read, can't put it down, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I freaked out of that thinking, no, me having a blog, no, that's for other people. So because I am rather introverted, believe it or not. So anyway, he kept persisting, so I decided to give it a go and see how it happened, and then the blog seemed to have taken off since then, and the rest is history. So, you know, for example, Jeff and Tim, I think Tim contacted me to review his book, and I volunteered to do Jeff as well. So that's been a real blessing. And even though I haven't read some of Travis's novels, I've got them waiting to be read. So that'll be in the future, the near future, I hope. So, yeah, then I got introduced to your show, Parker, and that's been a huge blessing as well.
And, of course, you being as one of my advisors and just a good friend has been a blessing to me as well. And so that's why I'm really excited. So I have to tell our listeners how this panel got started as I introduced our panel guest. I was halfway asleep about a week and a half ago, I think, something like that, maybe 2 weeks ago. I was halfway asleep and I heard this on my this out there in space because I'm half asleep. I don't know where the sound is coming from. And I kind of go, what is that noise? And I look, next thing you know, I happened to open my computer and I saw I had missed a Facebook call. And I said, oh, it's Peter. So I called him right back because, again, I always do what Peter tells me to do. If he's calling me, I must call him back. So I called him back and he said, Parker, I just finished reading Jeff Wilson's book, War Torn. I'm almost done with it. I'll be done with it tonight. I'm going to do a review. I said, oh, great. Jeff Wilson, that's awesome. You know. And so he said, we need to do a show for veterans. And that was the gist of our conversation. He said, we need to honor the people who write, who are soldiers and who write. And I said, that is absolutely wonderful. And from then on, that's how the conversation started, and that's how we got all our panelists together. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce our panelists to you. Our first panelist is Tim Monahan. Tim, go ahead and say hello to our listeners out there.
Hi, everybody. Good to be on the show. I want to thank Parker for having me, and also for Brother Peter for getting this thing started and for his friendship over the years.
And then we have Travis Perry, as you all know. Travis, say hello.
Hey, this is Travis. Just glad to be on the panel and looking forward to our conversation.
And then, of course, Jeff Wilson. So glad to have you as well.
Good to be here, and I appreciate you inviting me and also for having such a wonderful idea. It sounds like a lot of fun, and I hope it goes as well as we all think it will.
I think it will, because we're all not looking for perfection. We're just looking to share our thoughts, you know what I mean? And I just want to thank you all for your service in whatever capacity you have been in. I want to thank you all for your service. And we say a lot, but when I can sit here and do a podcast show in freedom, I think about all the people who died for those freedoms. I think about all the people who didn't get a chance to see their children grow up, or who came back from war dismembered or disfigured in some manner, and because I can sit here and do this. So I truly do say that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for your service. And so what I want to do is introduce each of you to our listeners. So go ahead. We got time, gentlemen. So go ahead. And Tim, you start. And for those listening, I'm going by last name alphabetical order, not because I like Tim the most and Jeff the least or anything like that. We're just going alphabetical order here. So, Tim, go ahead and introduce yourself, then Travis, then Jeff.
Sure. My name is Tim Moynihan, and I'm probably, from a writing perspective, probably the amateur in the bunch. So I've got a novel coming out on or about December 1st, being published by Elk Lake, called Prodigal Avenger. I've got a self-published novel called No Greater Love, an Afghan Memoir. And I've written a few articles and short fiction that's appeared in different places over the years. But I did serve in the U.S. Army from 1983 to 1995, and I continued serving as an intelligence officer, as a DOD civilian, and also as a contractor all the way through 2006. I have a lot invested in the military on a personal basis. I've got two sons that are in the Army. One, in fact, just completed his final combat patrol yesterday in Afghanistan. We'll be returning here in a couple of weeks. And my wife is also a veteran, so we're quite the family of soldiers. And so for me, I probably write more from the perspective of, I like to write about military topics, and I know there's military authors who write all kinds of genres, and there's those that speak more from their experience in the military. I'm probably at this point speaking more for my time in the military. And I do like to inform the public about how soldiers think, how veterans think, and I try to capture that from a spiritual angle. I'm a pastor of a church in Southern California. That's my main function in life. That's my mission and my calling. And writing is just a hobby that helps me present the gospel or present messages that I think I can't necessarily present perhaps from the pulpit, but preaching and teaching the gospel is what I do for a living.
All right.
That's it.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. And then Travis, go right ahead.
I enlisted in the Army Reserve in 1989. I was a veteran of the Gulf War as a medical specialist. I've actually been in reserve or guard the entire time of my service, but I've had five deployments and I'm gearing up for a sixth. I've been to Iraq, I've been to Afghanistan, and then I had two tours that were somewhat more pleasant in East Africa, the humanitarian assistance type things, and I've had short-term other deployments doing that. I've been a number of things, like I said, a medic a long time. I was a field artillery officer, but now I'm currently a civil affairs officer is my job. And I have an upcoming deployment next year to Central America that I'm doing training to gear up for, to be ready for. So I'm currently serving, though not really as active duty as a reservist who gets activated a lot. And one of the things I was really curious about as a kid, as so many kids are, is what is war really like? What is it like? And you want to know what you would be in war. How would you measure up to it? And I think life has given me the opportunity to answer some of those questions. And those questions inform my writing to a degree. I do write about war some, but I have a lot of interest. And maybe that's why I mostly write short stories. I have written a number of short stories and now publish short stories and novels. And I'm really happy to have things in the works, projects in the works that are more war and military focused than what I currently have published. But I do have quite a bit of short stories that are military related And anyway, I am super happy to be on this panel, and that's, I guess, all I have for now.
And Jeff, go ahead and round it all up for us.
Okay. Well, I'm Jeff Wilson. I'm, I guess as a writer, I'm best known for the Tier 1 series, which I co-author with another Navy veteran, Brian Andrews. Brian and I launched that series a couple of years ago, and it's been a tremendous success, which has been a lot of fun. I've got a few standalone books that I wrote by myself as well. So the fourth book in the Tier 1 series, American Operator, actually just came out this past Tuesday, so it's been a busy couple of weeks. Leading up to that, that's the fourth book in that series and my 10th novel. But the one that I'm most excited about is my 9th novel, which is my faith-based title called War Torn, which is something that God has had on my heart for a number of years. I am a Navy veteran. I've served 14 years of active duty time, and during that time made multiple deployments with Naval Special Warfare. With an East Coast-based SEAL team. And then since then, I finished that up in about 2008, and since then I've done a lot of consulting and contract work in a variety of other settings. So I've got a huge tie to the military, obviously, and a rather rich background to draw on for the books that I write. But for the last few years, I've been leading a men's military ministry at Grace Family Church in Tampa, and under their Courageous Ministry. And that's what really has my heart on fire right now and was sort of the inspiration for this book. I personally have experienced some things that, when I don't know if you would call it exactly a crisis of faith, but actually that's probably not too far off. Certainly a lot of the things that I believed and felt strongly about were challenged would maybe be the best thing to say during my wartime service. And those were things I had to work through. Fortunately, I have a wonderful wife who leads a women's ministry at our church as well. And with her help, I was able to resolve a lot of that for me. But that's the impetus for this book, was to sort of bring those questions out in the forefront and share them with people that could benefit from them and people that just want to understand them better, whether it's combat veterans who maybe shared the same experiences and are looking for the same answers, or spouses trying to support them, or just civilian folks who want to better understand, you know, some of the sacrifices that the military and their families make. So that's my story.
And you're sticking to it. And that I love it. Absolutely love
at
it.
At least for the next, hour and 15 minutes. Yeah.
I know, right? I like the fact that you gentlemen all have such a varied background in the armed forces, and you're all coming from very different perspectives. But I sense a sense of continuity between all three of you. And I think Peter, he's sort of my guest host here today, too. Peter kind of senses that. Why the first people he reached out to were you, because he says that continuity, even though you all have different experiences as far as being writing. Now, my question would be, and we're going to start with Jeff here, because you kind of touched on it as you were introducing yourself about the different things that happened to you and using those things and putting it into the writing form, you know. One of the questions that was asked, and I'm going to pull up that question now, and we'll start our talk here. One of the questions that was asked, and I have many to choose from. I'm trying to find out. Okay, so we have a question from Heather in Lamoni, Iowa. And Heather says, what do you wish other authors knew about being a soldier? And so let's go ahead and start off that question with your response to that, and then, gentlemen, Tim and Travis, you can, of course, take it, you know, add to it as you see fit.
I mean, that's a really, you could write a chapter on that question, but if I were to boil it down, you know, in both the kinds of works I do, you know, I write thrillers for a living, but this faith book is obviously the thing that I'm so passionate about now. But in both of those books, including just the entertainment fiction, the pulp fiction, I guess, which is all the Tier 1 series is, what we try to do, both Brian and I, when we write these characters in these situations, is we try to make the characters come to life even more than the settings and the tech and those sorts of things. Because I think that that's what a lot of, and having other military guys to talk to, on this call is kind of fun for me to see if they feel the same way. I think that when I read military fiction, that's what bothers me the most. Like, if you don't get a weapon system right, or you don't get a particular tactical situation exactly right, that's okay. But if you don't get the people right, it bothers me a lot. So what I try to do in my solo works and with Brian is to write characters that are the people that I've served with. So you'll see in all of my works, including my inspirational work, that these guys are never superheroes. They're ordinary people doing extraordinary things, because those are the people that I served with. I had the honor of serving, you know, in a fairly elite organization with the SEAL teams. And those guys are humble, ordinary guys. They come home and they take the trash to the curb and they go to their kid's baseball game. It's not like some of these TV shows that are out there now where it's just drama all the time. They're ordinary, family-oriented people. And so I try to write characters that bring that to life. So if there was anything that I would want readers to take away from the stuff that I write, and of course, most importantly, the inspirational stuff, it would be that, what these people are like, these ordinary people who have an extraordinary drive, a sense of patriotism, a sense of service that puts them in these situations that sometimes demands great sacrifice. So, I mean, I guess if I would give a short, relatively short answer, it would be that, writing about the people so that that's what people can get to know in the work.
All right, Travis, I know you got a response to that.
Well, I appreciate what he said about superheroes. I thought it was good because, I mean, one of the things that's on my mind is to I'm afraid of I guess I'm trying to say this the way I really mean it, and I'm not sure what the right way is, but I worry about stories in which the heroes are invulnerable and can't experience any harm, and I think that war does cause harm to people, and I think that that's clear. I think we should be, especially not just as writers, but as Christian writers, we should be honest about what war is like, that war has terrible aspects to it, even when people are doing good, and that's part of what I want to bring out in war, that there's part of it, an aspect that's awful, and I mean that sounds obvious, right? But I mean, I think there tends to be one of two things that happens in fiction. People either kind of glorify war or they vilify war, you know, and to have a balance in which you see that there is actual real glory in war, there is real actual things to be attained, that there's things that are worth it in terms of honor and all in honorable service, yet nonetheless it's a horrible set of events, you know, and so I suppose that's one thing that's really important to me. And then when we talk about superhero stories, you know, I can like them sometimes, and some people really love them, but for me, I am more interested in real heroes, people who are vulnerable, who can, you know, and of course, writing characters you know is just kind of natural, right? That's what we do. I mean, I appreciate the comment, Jeff, that was made, but, you know, it's just, you know, that's the easiest way to write, is to write someone you know in a slightly different form, and you don't want to write fake people, you know, that have no characteristics in common with real folks.
And don't you think it makes a story better? Like, the stakes are higher, aren't they, when they have their own insecurities and they have their own frailties and they can be damaged and hurt? Like, it's a whole different level of stake for the reader when they can invest in a character that is not a superhero. It just elevates the stakes and makes it more exciting. So I'm surprised that
Absolutely.
More writers don't
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
And Tim, did you want to round it up? I know you say you're the quote-unquote amateur of the bunch, but I think still that you've watched enough media to weigh in on this as well. So I would love to hear your thoughts if you have any to share.
Well, sure. I would echo all the sentiments here, especially about characterization, about having genuine human beings in the story, the way soldiers think, the way military people think. I've also had the benefit of being married to an Army veteran. So my wife's a paratrooper, and so I often tell the Marines in my church she's jumped out of more airplanes than them. But anyways, but the thing that really directed me into the military, I joined when I was 18, was I was addicted to the image of the media image, the movie, war movies. I mean, I saw Apocalypse Now, and I wanted to be, you know, the Martin Sheen character. I wanted to be the hard-drinking, slightly insane Army Ranger. And so that's what I became. That's what I pursued when I was in the military. I didn't become a Christian until 1991. So I pursued that. That was what I read in books. That's what I wanted to be. But as I was pursuing that, I also recognized that, you know, most of us, especially back in the 80s when the military was, the standards were a little different. A lot of us were the rejects of society that joined the military. I mean, the post-Vietnam military was certainly different than the sort of Eagle Scout perception people have of the military today. And so when I came to the point where I had my crisis of faith, where I finally surrendered my life to Jesus in 1991, it really dawned on me that one thing you never get in the movies or the books, you get the psychology sometimes, but you never get the spiritual side.
Hmm.
So, you know, you never see James Bond with a soul. You never see see these characters going through that in popular media. And so, you know, I took a slow path to becoming an author. And when I did, as a Christian, I wanted to write Christian fiction. But I found there was sort of an expectation, even in Christian audiences, that I would portray the Eagle Scout side of your average military person, which isn't real either.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have sort of these two extremes of these characters, of these hard-drinking tough guys that are indestructible, or these Eagle Scouts that are maybe a little bit vulnerable, but they have maybe they're a little bit too much like the female characters in some of our romance thrillers. You know what I'm saying? and I wasn't comfortable with that either. And so when I first got the idea, and it's interesting because I was reading what Jeff wrote in his acknowledgments about War Torn, about how this story kind of came to him and he didn't really want to write it. I felt that way when I wrote the my first effort at published fiction, which was No Greater Love, was I really had this strong story that it was a heartbreaking story, but it felt to me like I had to tell it because I don't think it's the side that people see of military people. And getting the characters right, the people right, was absolutely essential to delivering the story because that's exactly what the average veteran's going to see. They're not going to care. You know, we're going to make mistakes technically, and I'm sure I did, but in some of my books, but we can't make the mistake about the people. We got to get that right, and we've got to portray the spiritual dilemma of war in a way that's balanced but accurate. Because our military, you know, the bottom line is they need Jesus. You know, that's the answer to PTSD. That's the answer to long deployments, separation from your spouse. And as a pastor, most of my church is Marines. And so I've had to deal with this on a very personal level with guys that have come back from overseas with a variety of different experiences overseas, but the same problems, regardless of whether they were in high-intensity conflict or if they sat around a cantonment area and just played video games for 6 months. You know, there's still issues of social isolation and struggle that the civilian world doesn't really understand that needs to be conveyed in a way that can reflect the spiritual need of our military.
I like the fact that all of you said something related to the fact that portraying the people accurately, it wasn't about the tech, it wasn't even about some of the procedures, it's about the people. And I know me and Peter, I know Peter may have picked up on it too. It was like, wow, we have all this strong panel of military people, and what's really important is the people that we portray in our fiction. And I know Peter, one of the things you said with especially Tim's and Jeff's book is just how the character spoke to you. The character was the one who popped out at you, Peter. Would you say that Tim and Jeff, I already know Travis does anyway, just really effectively show that the human soul is the most important part of war? What would you think, Peter?
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, I just get a little emotional because of all this, but because it's so real. But I remember when I read Tim's book, I actually cried a lot because there was so much in there that I could relate to, even though I've never been in the army or the armed forces or whatever. And I grew up with, you know, none of that, like, unlike the authors here. But there was a real, it was raw, and it touched me in a way that I'm thinking, these people really do need Jesus, just like these three guys have said. But what impressed me was that war seems to put us in a situation that I guess we were never intended to be in. Travis and Tim might disagree, but I don't believe that we're designed to, by God, to be put in this situation, because we're, look what it does. You've got PTSD, you have relationship breakdown after they get back from war, and it just seems to wreak havoc on the soul and the spirit of the soldiers during and after. But one of the things that impressed me was listening to Jeff and Tim was that, you know, they need Jesus, and also, and I think Travis, you said that as well. But the other thing is that I think they need each other, and we need to be doing a whole lot more for the war veterans, because it, to me, being in, hearing a lot about, you know, American soldiers, and I hardly hear anything about our counterparts here in Australia, there doesn't seem to be too much, and it just seems to be like the military have, and the government have, you know, got you guys where they want you to go and fight, but then after you've done your service, you're left hanging. There's no support, and that's where the PTSD can blow out and affect all these relationships. And you know, listening to Tim, I'm thinking Tim sounds very much like the Adrian character that's in Jeff's book, who I really admired, because he was, as you guys have said, someone that's really quite, you know, an ordinary guy doing extraordinary things, and yet the light of Christ shone out of him, as Jeff portrayed. That really did impress me, because then I'm thinking, Jesus is the answer to that huge deficit that war leaves in men. And what's impressed me about the novels that I've read from you guys is that you portray that human side very well, that frailty, that rawness. And to tell you the truth, even though I'm not military-based, that really does, I find, give me a sense of what true masculinity and even biblical masculinity should be. So I'm not sure if that's a concept that you guys have picked up yourselves, but I just found that really quite powerful. And it's just another way of God using guys like you to shine more of his light and what it is to be human and to have a relationship with him.
That's
Parker, can I comment on that for just a second?
Sure.
Because
right
that
ahead.
Really resonated with me. Thank you so much, Peter. The idea that war is an unnatural state, you know, I think that's a shock for young military members, because you grow up watching the movies and the TV shows, and there's a lot of glorification, and I'm taking a moral stand on that, but I think that there's an expectation that's what it's like. And it's fun to have a pastor with us, because from a spiritual Christian perspective, I think that it's not, obviously that's not God's plan for us. I mean, we live in a fallen world where God's perfect plan for his children was never this. And so I think that doesn't go without saying, but I mean, I think it's something easily accepted. But I think that the idea of war and killing and having people who want to kill you, it's so psychologically unnatural, and I think that people don't expect that. I think when you go to war, you don't expect that. There's an author named Dave Grossman. He's a clinical psychologist. He's a former Army Ranger, and he wrote a book called On Killing, and it's an evaluation of the psychology of warfare. And he talks extensively and now teaches extensively about how unnatural that state is. And his purpose is to bring that out as a way to combat that and make warfighters more effective and police officers and that sort of thing. But what resonated with me reading his book was just what Peter was saying. It's a highly unnatural state, unless you're a sociopath, to be in a situation where you're expected to kill or where someone is trying to kill you. And I think that if you don't, whether you're writing entertaining stuff like the Tier 1 series or you're trying to inspire people like I did in War Torn, if you don't bring that out, then there's no hope whatsoever in achieving realism. And in the Tier 1 books, we're setting out to entertain, obviously. But I think that you still want to bring those elements in because that realism resonates with people, and it both entertains and informs a little bit better. So it's great hearing Peter say that, especially someone who's not a combat veteran, having the insight to see that, because that's a huge driving force in causing a crisis of faith that so many, I mean, so many military members have experienced. You know, I had a very strong faith growing up. I had a very strong relationship with God, but my wartime experience made me really doubt, and I'm embarrassed by that because I feel like it shouldn't have happened, but there was so much going on that I was like, where is God in this? It's such an unnatural thing. So I really appreciate Peter bringing that up. I think it's a huge, huge part of writing this kind of fiction, but also the message that we're trying to deliver in the Christian fiction that's meant to be more inspirational. So thank you, Peter.
Hey, can I jump in here too?
Go right ahead.
You know, I appreciate what Jeff was saying, and you know, I think one of the things said earlier about how a lot of fiction neglects the spiritual aspect. I think Tim was the one that brought this out, but that happens to be true. And it happens to be, though, when people are facing life and death situations, it's one of the times when people are most willing to talk about God. And while it does cause crises in faith for people who walk in with faith or some kind of religious background, for people who have no religious background, sometimes the conflict of war is the first time they really think about God. You know, and there's a saying that there's no atheist in a foxhole, and I don't think that's quite a true saying. There are people who are atheists at all times, you know, but there are people who really first think about God for the first time in conflict. In fact, that's one of the things that happens in hardship in the world, even in the other kinds of hardship like poverty. You know, some of the most poverty-stricken places on earth are where people have the strongest faith. And one of the things combat can do is takes you out of your comfort zone and puts you in this unnatural situation that you never expected. And you're dealing with the fact people are getting killed. You know, in my case, I witnessed some of it secondhand. I myself did not kill anyone, but I was nearby when people were killed. And it strikes you as that this is, you know, it has a way of reaching through all the false excuses, all the we call the BS, all the stuff that isn't important, and all of a sudden you realize, hey, this is, you know, we really, you know, you really need God to get through it. So that's one of the things that I'm really, you know, I haven't read these other two guys' work, and I'm excited to read it now because I want to see how they deal with that issue of introducing the spiritual, because it's so important. How do you face these things? How do you really deal with these problems without Christ? Well, a lot of people don't deal with it. They actually kind of collapse in one way or another. And even with Christ, it's not easy. But this is, you know, this is how do you deal with these issues? You need the help of the Almighty God, or you wouldn't make it at all. That's my perspective.
And what we're going to do right now is take a quick short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with our distinguished panel about writing God, faith, and duty. I like the fact that all our panelists, Peter included, mentioned that the most important aspect when it comes to writing military fiction or speculative fiction that has military aspects to it is that the people are important, not the tech, not even the world building where you have this really cool, you know, if you're in space, like space military, something like that. You know, it's not that. It's the people who are important. And I hope for our veterans who are listening out there that this is just resonating with you as it is with me. And you have every opportunity to call in and ask questions by calling in at 929-477-1965. We're going to go ahead and take another quick break. When we come back, more with our panel in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Hi, is your book club in need of some fresh and exciting questions to ask club members and authors at your next book club meeting? Literization's game is 70 thought-provoking questions to really get into an in-depth discussion about the books you and your club members are reading. These questions really get into the characters, the storyline, and into the author's head. These questions may just give you and your book club members a whole new way to get into a new conversation, a literization. Literizations is also a great set of tools for bloggers, interviewers, and authors to use as discussion questions. Are you ready to get lit? Please visit our website at litversations.com, LITVERSATION.com. And please like our Facebook page at Simply Said Reading Accessories. Thank you.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff, our Veterans Day Writers Showcase. And we are talking to several authors who have been members of the armed forces, whether active or retired. And we're also talking to Peter Younghusband, who is a Christian speculative fiction review guru, who has brought this wonderful, distinguished panelists to us together. So I'm really glad to have them all. We have Tim Monahan, Jeff Wilson, and Travis Perry, and they are all with us sharing their thoughts about God, faith, writing, and duty. And I'm so glad, again, gentlemen, that you are here with me today. One of the things that I thought was, as I was listening to you, one of the things that was kind of amusing for me in one way was listening to how the person was so important. And I am I like military movies. One of my favorite military movies is Platoon. I love that movie. But one of the movies that, you know, you're getting like a cheap thrill, and that was The Expendables, you know. And in The Expendables, there's a scene in there that I hate. And the scene I hate is that, I forgot who walked in, but someone's walking in a room, and this guy is slamming a chain into someone's head, you know, he's slamming a chain. The guy has some kind of metal thing, and he's slamming a chain, slamming chains, slamming chains. I'm like, this is not even real. Can we at least make our torture scenes real, at least, you know? And so next thing you know, he kills the guy who's slamming the head off, and then it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then you got to go, oh, okay. Well, of course he could survive getting hit with a chain with a metal thing on top of his head. Of course he can survive.
Right.
You
know? Right.
Of course, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's the only one who can. And so I was thinking about some of that because one of the things you say you don't like it, the soldiers should be so invulnerable that they're no earthly good, and then so sensitive that they're like romance novels. And for those of you who don't know, I write romance novels, so that's why I kind of laughed my head off when you say that.
I knew you would appreciate that.
I did. And so another question we got several questions, but first we did get a thank you. We got a thank you from Stacy in Cincinnati. Stacy says, thank you for honoring our vets. She was talking to me about the show. She said, thank you for honoring our vets this way. I have many friends or friends with children who are either active duty or once served. Special place in my heart for such bravery and sacrifice. Stacy, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. And so, Jeremy from Dothan, Alabama asked this, did your service ground your world building / writing firmly in reality, or does it cause you to stretch more easily into what if? Please explain. And that's from Jeremy in Dothan, Alabama. Who wants to take that one on first?
I'll take it on. I like to write what ifs in both fantasy and science fiction. I don't know how speculative these other guys get. I think, though, the thing about it is what I'm looking for is things that are true, even if I change the setting or the world building. I enjoy playing with, you know, like fantasy settings or science fiction settings, but I also, you know, people are the same. Well, maybe not exactly the same, but you get what I'm saying. And there's some things that have to carry over, and if they don't carry over, you're not really writing about war. You're writing about something else. You're not writing about war or warriors. You're writing about, you know what I mean? I would say neither. It doesn't hurt me from being speculative, but it shapes the way in which I'm speculative and the way I write.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there's probably principles that you learn from having been on active duty or in the military that that can inform your writing no matter what you write about. So Robert Heinlein, the famous science fiction writer, was a Navy Academy grad and certainly reflected in books like Starship Troopers, which is completely speculative and off the charts. And I'll be honest, I wrote Prodigal Avenger with a completely fantasy special access program, special operations unit that probably my friends in the special ops world and the intelligence world would probably find pretty amusing. And so someone who's never been in that world will think it's real because the details are there. So maybe it's a little bit of information ops for those that know what that means. But the reality is it's pure fantasy. So that made it fun. I mean, I was able to take information that I knew. I've never even been to Afghanistan, by the way. I've been to Pakistan, but never to Afghanistan. And so I'm writing about this program, putting in a lot of interesting details. But, again, the informed reader will know it's not real, but most people are not in that world of in that world where they would know the difference. So it was a lot of fun to write it.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that you said is that, you know, the readers aren't informed. And they are, and that's fine, because some of us just read for the entertainment. We don't necessarily care if it's true or not. We just want to read for it. So I kind of like that. Travis knows I'm actually writing my own military fiction story. Well, it's going to be specific. It's a pre-apocalyptic military fiction. But I don't know how to hold a gun. And so I'm so glad I have you all to come back to, because when I get that going, you know, I'll be just, you know, bombarding you with tons of questions. Another question we received, we got a question from, Sarah from New Haven, Connecticut. Sarah, thank you for your question. She has two questions. She said, first question is, what military rank do you think is overused in books? That's her first question. You want to tackle that one, Jeff?
See, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, when you're reading Special Warfare, every hero SEAL has got to be a Master Chief, right? But in reality, there's only a handful of them. I worked at a weird command where when you put on Senior Chief, they had the ceremony, and then you still got everyone coffee because it was one of those places where, you know, people are very elevated in rank. So, you know, you hear a lot of Master Chief. You hear Sergeant, right? Everybody's a Sergeant in every good character. You're either a Sergeant or you're the Private, right? So probably those, you know, you're either high or low. Those are probably the big ones that leap to mind.
Either one else want to add to that or no?
Well, I have the captain. I'm a captain, actually, right now. I'm apparently a captain currently. And a captain is kind of the superhero rank, you know, captain, so-and-so captain. I don't know about military fiction. It's overused too much, but it does probably get a little too much mileage, captain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to make it really big difference between being a captain in the Army or Air Force and a captain in the Navy, right? And a lot of people
doesn't realize
the difference between an 03 and an 06. It's like universe of difference.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I actually picked a rank in Prodigal Avenger on purpose because it's such a unique rank for the Army, and that's I've got a warrant officer as the main character. And so if you don't know what a warrant officer is, I know Travis does, but nobody else in the military appreciates what an Army warrant officer does, which is a perfect rank because a warrant officer, if you've served, respects neither officers nor enlisted people. They basically get to do their own thing.
Right.
And her second question was, would an Army Ranger be trained in sword fighting? In my book, he isn't. I just know if he should be. And that was her second question.
In sword fighting?
No.
Is an Army Ranger
routinely, or is there ever an opportunity?
Is an Army Ranger what?
There's a famous story about a British officer. His name is Mad Jack. I forget his last name, but he actually carried a broadsword with him and a longbow to the battlefield in World War II. which, you know, there's interesting real people that actually exist. But that was like his own thing, right? The British Army did not train him to use a broadsword. He did it on his own. And there really was, this guy really existed. But I don't know. The Army does not train Rangers to use broadswords.
I went to Ranger school. I could confirm there's no sword training at Ranger school.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, if somebody carried a sword, they would be seen as a nut, you know, like the Mad Jack, what's his name, in World War II. So.
Awesome.
But it's a great idea.
And a great question. We're not laughing at you. We're not laughing at you.
I like that. You know, I like the incredulity that just kind of said, what? So
I
guess
there
is a time we can stretch the truth.
I did know a civil affairs officer that took theatrical sword fighting in college and could actually fight with a sword. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm civil affairs. We're some weird ones, so there's definitely a problem with that around. But, yeah.
I knew you wouldn't be surprised by the comment.
No, I'm not too surprised by that.
What was the other question we got? Okay. Another question we got, I'm just going to just jump here. We have some practical things, some questions related to some scenarios here. So Dawn from Facebook says, if the president were to go rogue, what would they do? Dawn, thank you so much for your question. Gentlemen, who wants to take a stab at that one?
I think Jeff needs this question. I'm going to send it to Jeff.
What did I do to you? I mean, I think that the opportunity in fiction is vast and almost unlimited in what you could do with a scenario like that. In the real world, then there's a slew of checks and balances involving the judicial branch and the legislative branch that would come into play. So that movie where he goes nuts and so the military comes into D.C., that's not probably how it's going to happen. It would happen as more a political and legislative and judicial action more than a military action.
Okay, hope that answers
that's,
your
but
question.
But that'd make a boring book, right?
No one wants to read that.
Who's going
to
read that?
The thing I would add
7 days
to that
in
is
May, it's been written.
The U.S. military, we're not trained the same mentalities like, the Prussian army or the Nazi army or something like that. There are orders that people would refuse to obey. But, I'm not saying that would happen by just a drop of a hat. It would have to be something really extreme. But I'm certain there's certain kinds of orders a president could give in theory that the military would not carry out, like to nuke, the U.S. populace. I'm quite sure that the Air Force Command would not obey such an order, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a really good point, and that's probably more to the point, in terms of military aspects, is that we do have those checks and balances in the military too. So that good thinking. That was way better than my answer, I got to tell you.
I gave
myself time to think.
He said, "You answer first, and then if he sounds crazy, then I'll make it better." Right? That's how.
There you go.
Yeah, teamwork.
That's the
teamwork.
Russian political motive. Did you know that? They look good by making us look bad. That's their whole game.
So we got another question from Andy from Plymouth, Indiana. Andy says, "What's the thing writers get most wrong about combat, and how can we be more accurate while still engaging our readers?" Andy, thank you so much for your question. Who wants to take that one?
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record. It's Jeff. But the real answer really is the character stuff. I mean, if you want to get the combat stuff right, build the characters that are real and believable, and you can almost have them do anything, quite frankly. But in my experience, that's what's lacking the most. I mean, you see, guys are carrying a weapon that they wouldn't carry, or there's too many rounds or whatever, those kinds of little things. But I think those are tolerable. I think when you have the guy, who is that superhero we were talking about earlier, completely unaffected by what he's doing, we have this guy, John Dempsey, in the Tier 1 series, and he is a warrior. He's a 23-year Tier 1 SEAL turned covert operator. And those guys are warriors, but they still have a soul. And so I think that's probably the worst mistake you can make in those combat sequences, is having no emotional response, having no element of fear, having none of that stuff. Those technical things, a little, you know, we live in a great age now. You don't have to go to the library. Just open up your Apple and do a quick Google search, and you can figure out a lot of the technical stuff. But the character stuff, that's huge.
Yeah, I'm sort of a Puritan on some of this, because it does disturb me that as a society we're so detached from the military that good researchers can't figure out some really basic things about the force structure, or things that we're not going to do or that we're not allowed to do. And so I think it's possible for authors to be irresponsible in the way they present military subjects, because, sad to say, a lot of people read fiction and it informs their ideas about the military or national security policy or things like that. So I am a little bit annoyed. You know, some people spend a huge amount of time, like Tom Clancy did before he wrote Hunt for Red October, to make sure they got it right. And then, you know, if you talk to a submarine guy, he'll tell you all the things he did wrong, you know. So I know us military guys can be a little snobby about it, but I do think I think there's a social responsibility, and that maybe because I'm a pastor, I feel more passionately about this than some other people would. But to get it so wrong that it just adds to what I think is a real national problem we have in our country, people not understanding the military or what it does. I expect Stephen King to make all the military people look scary because he's politically that way, and he's from a generation of people that were suspicious about the military. But it doesn't do any good to portray certain things incorrectly. And so without getting too specific or name-calling, I would have to just say that's something that bothers me personally.
I think the thing that gets me, if I want to jump in on this subject, is, you know, and it relates to what's already been said, but I think the portrayal of people as being invulnerable, you know, that if you're sufficiently trained that you can't be killed is kind of the idea, and that appears in stories. And, you know, the power of weapons, modern weapons, is so enormous that really it's just there's so many ways to kill somebody. And that it all it takes is a bullet. You know, you don't have to be an expert. If the person happens to be shot at the right place at the right time, they're going to die, no matter how well trained they are. And that is a reality I think that's missing from some kind of stories. You know,
yeah.
If you're Jason Bourne, you're invulnerable. You can't be killed, and that is not real. Real world soldiers, warriors can die at any time in a mission, and
yes.
That's
Snipers and shrapnel are something you can't train for.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something that I think that stories, I guess I'm against that in stories. I want stories to really get the idea across that this is not just a walk in the park for anybody, no matter how well-trained they happen to be.
Another question we received is... I'm sorry, was someone saying something?
I was going to say, I was going to say, I think that's what makes military fiction so appealing, is because if you have the characters as vulnerable and, you know, susceptible to being injured and blah, blah, I think the common reader, and when I say common, I don't mean that derogatory, or the widespread reader, especially if they're probably male, is... they're probably going to relate to that a lot better than, say, having somebody like Jason Bourne or like Indiana Jones, who's not in the military, that's in his movies. But, you know, he seems to be invincible as well. You know, to me, if I was to read book after book of the military genre where the character is invincible, I'd be thinking, well, if I want to have something superficial and something hugely entertaining, I've got to be in the mood for that, because, you know, that would be someone who's plastic and not human. And I'm glad you guys do that in your fiction, that you make these people real and vulnerable and flawed. That's what really appeals to me, and that's what gets me coming back to military fiction time after time.
And I like the fact that you guys are all mentioning that, too. I was trying to think, and I just saw the movie recently, so it makes me upset that I can't remember the name of it. But it was a movie where the guy lost it. Like, the drill sergeant was just really cruel to the guy. And then he lost it, and he became a really good soldier, but then he shot the drill sergeant in the bathroom. I cannot think of the name of the movie. It is escaping me right now. It's on Netflix recently. I can't. But what happened, I'm making the point because he was first the brunt of the group where people were making fun of him, but then he was so humiliated by the drill sergeant that he eventually became a better soldier, but then he snapped. Like, he literally snapped and lost it, and then he killed the drill sergeant and himself. And so it lets you know that if you really want to show a soulless person, that's kind of where you're getting at, someone who actually snaps, and they can't come back to the reality. I'm not talking about people who deal with PTSD. I'm talking about a soulless soldier will probably not be a real person, you know. And I like the fact that you mentioned that.
Yeah, and you know, so, you're kind of talking about one of the other extremes in military fiction or mm-hmm. media or even in the movies is the idea that all military people are broken because somehow the military makes them that way. That is a fallacy. That is very irresponsible and has led to a lot of, bad policy in the U.S. about treating veterans. The idea that they're all potential time bombs is absolutely, mm-hmm. and it's caused by the military, is absolutely outrageous.
And that's a good reason why we're
Amen
having
to
this
that.
Show to do that. That's why we have this show, because we want to set the record straight. And I, like I said, I have all respect for our military personnel, because the only – thing I can do as a soldier is kill flies with hairspray. That's the only thing I can do as a soldier. So, you know, I will be the queen of killing flies with hairspray if I had to, you know. But other than that, it's it, you know. So another hypothetical we got here was from Jesse from, I think it's Wobo, Montana. I may be saying it wrong. How the military of a large country like the U.S. Oh, how would the military of a large country like the U.S. handle an invasion/apocalypse where they're no longer able to get supplies due to a collapse of the infrastructure? Jesse, thank you so much for your question. Who wants to tackle that one? I probably should let Travis tackle that one. What do you think, Travis?
Okay, yeah, I'll do it. look, I mean, the military has stockpiles of things in various places. Pretty much any military base has stockpiles of food and fuel that wouldn't last too long at the end of the world, but one of the first things that would happen if you had infrastructure collapse is that military folks would be trying to rebuild it. We're talking hypothetical. This is world building stuff, not character building stuff so much. But
right.
If you're talking like The Walking Dead, okay, one of the striking things about the series, The Walking Dead, is that where are all the military guys? Because in truth, military guys, bases and units would probably do better than average civilians. And it's just kind of left out from the story, you know, for story purposes. But just think, if you want to think realistically, military bases would defend themselves. They would be able to keep out the zombies. They would be able to, you know, and they would do things. Their commanders would do things to keep the system running. So I guess I think that's one of the things you have to think about. You know, let's say where she lives out in Montana, eastern Montana, there's a big dam, Fort Peck Dam. Military guys, if that somehow got destroyed, would try to repair it. Military engineers try to get the power flowing again and, you know, make sure there's electricity there and make sure, you know, that's what military people do in addition to combat.
Makes sense to me because I don't know what to do in that situation. I always said that if I was in a situation of a zombie apocalypse, I would just probably just, you know, I'll say, just eat me. I'm not going to try to run for my life. I'm not going to try to survive. I'm going to heaven. I'll see Jesus sooner. Just get it over with. That's probably what I do because I don't think I have that type of fortitude. I don't know. I hope I never find out if a zombie ever attacks.
You'll feel more confident after you get that, after you do your research on shooting a gun, you'll feel a lot more confident.
Hey, Parker, can I jump in on a previous topic just a little bit? Okay. Hey, I just wanted to mention that Jeff talked earlier about Dave Grossman's books, and one of his books on combat, he talks about there's a difference between post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress disorder. And there's a lot of veterans that have post-traumatic stress, but that's not the same as being incapacitated by it. And as Tim was saying, it's a mistake to portray everybody, I mean, it's like they either portray somebody as totally broken or having no problems at all. And the truth is a lot of people have been affected by post-traumatic stress, and that's not the same as the disorder in which you cannot cope with.
Very good.
If you understand what I'm saying. And that's just a piece of realism about veterans that maybe some authors are missing. There's a lot of people dealing with post-traumatic stress that are not actually disabled by it, that are able to deal with it, as Lieutenant Colonel Grossman talked about in his book On Combat.
I think that's exactly right. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's important in, you know, the world, like you're pointing out. It's important that people know that outside of what we're talking about in fiction and world building and character development. That's the real world. I would say the difference between someone who's been in combat who has PTS and doesn't is the guy who has nothing. He's probably a sociopath, so he's got his own diagnosis. I mean, you can't be in that environment, and I think Grossman would agree with this, and not have it affect you. Whether it affects you pathologically, that's a different story, and that's a vast minority of people. But everyone's affected to some degree in some way by a warfare experience, for sure.
For sure. And for those of you who are maybe just be tuning in to our panel, we are talking to three, and then we also have Peter, who is our part of our panel here, about veterans who are either retired or are currently in active duty in the armed forces, talking about writing, God, faith, and duty. We're talking to Tim Monahan, Jeff Wilson, and Travis Perry, along with Peter Younghusband. And Peter is the one who brought all these gentlemen together, and I have the honor of hosting them on this special edition of The Right Stuff. We are still taking your questions and comments, so if you want to call in and ask, you know you can by calling in at 929-477-1965. Again, call in at 929-477-1965. We're going to go ahead and take another quick break. When we come back, more with our distinguished panel, more of your questions. Again, call in if you want to weigh in, 929-477-1965.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guests on The Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com. or order a print issue on magcloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
Hi, and welcome back to this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm your host, Parker J, and we are talking to my distinguished panel of authors who are also soldiers, either in active service or retired. We're talking to Tim Monahan. He's the author of No Greater Love, Afghan Memoir. We're talking to Jeff Wilson. He is the author of War Torn. And we're talking to my friend Travis Perry. He is the author of Mythic Orbits. He's also the publisher of Bear Pup publications. And then we're talking to the Christian speculative fiction review guru, Peter Younghusband, who brought all these gentlemen together. And once again, gentlemen, I'm so glad you are here with me today to just tackle this topic, Veterans Day of God, duty, faith, writing, and answering our supporters' questions. And so we're getting toward the last segment of our show here. Again, thank you all for taking time to be with us today. So I want to definitely make sure that we honor you. And one of the ways I want to honor you is that Al from Monroe, Michigan, from the way he talks, he has seen he has been in war. And this was his comment he said. He said, "Most of us who were there don't really care to talk about it. Myself, I neither read nor write combat, especially realistic, and I don't do grimdark. I lived in the dark for too long and was a very dark person myself until the light pulled me out of there. Not fantasy to me, can never again be fantasy, so I won't touch it. I will occasionally answer tactical, technical, or material questions. That's it." He says, "If you ask and get an answer, please don't tell me how you use it." But he also shared a poem with us, and the poem is called "I Am a Soldier," and he says the first part of the poem is the oath of enlistment, which has no expiration date. He said, "Here's a look into the heart of any soldier. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the officers appointed over me according to the regulations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. I am a soldier. I do not choose a time or place. Convenience is not my vocabulary. I stand at the ready, and when my orders come, I go. I am a soldier. I may not see a child born, a wife, parents, friend. I may never see them again, but willingly and with conviction, I go. I am a soldier. The job I am given to do, I will do. Even if it costs me my life, I will do it. I am a soldier. A car approaches, a bicycle, a cart. I fix my stare and hold my senses. I have but a short time to take action, but I show restraint. It's part of my job. I am a soldier. I repair hospitals, schools, and homes. I help rebuild smiles for people I have never met before. It, too, is part of my job. I am a soldier. I gaze at those around me in a foreign land. I see a child, a wife, a husband, parents, friends. Oh, how I wish I were home. Oh, how I wish they were mine. I am a soldier. Yes, take me home, but only when the job is done. Only when the job is done. I am a soldier." And that was a poem that Al from Monroe, Michigan, shared with us. And Al, thank you so much for sharing that. As you listen to that, I'll be interested in getting some of your thoughts. I know I was pretty moved when I read it because I was just thinking about the level of commitment that our men and women take when we put on these uniforms of the armed forces. And this level of commitment was shown in that poem. So what are your thoughts as you heard that or as you were listening to it? I would love to get your thoughts about that.
Well, I'd like to thank our brother for taking the time to write that for us.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, by me not being in military forces, and by just, like, I'm probably like an average person who just watches military movies and watches, you know, like, for those of you who, and I think Travis knows this, I think Peter does too, I'm a huge Predator alien fan, so I'm a huge of the franchise is huge for me, and so that's military kind of so it's kind of like that, and so that there's my exposure, hard men who take on aliens and dangerous predators, you know, that's it. But when I read this poem, it was just so tender. It was so letting us know that I'm here to do a job to protect my country. I'm here to do it, and I'm vulnerable. That's one thing you guys kept saying, the vulnerability that our soldiers have, you know. They want to go home, and then they'll take the trash out. They'll go ahead and watch the game or, you know, go to their kids' baseball game. You know, they're regular men who are just doing their job, men and women, rather, who are just doing their job, so we don't want to forget those, too. Another question that we received.
Yeah, Parker, can I say something on that real quick? You know, one of the things I want to point out is people have a variety of reasons for joining the military and have different personalities. So I'm afraid to say I've known soldiers who were not all necessarily that great of people who are still wearing the uniform. I mean, we don't maybe want to talk about that, but that happens, that there are people that aren't that altruistic, that are in it for themselves in one way or another. I think the service tends to weed out the worst of people if they try to stay, you know what I'm saying? There's a number of things that will make you not as successful, but it's something that not everybody is the same, and not even everybody has the same attitude about a lot of different kinds of things, you know, and you can't, not everyone's equal in the military, even though we might think that everyone who serves is the same, and I just wanted to point that out.
I do think probably most every vet I know is uncomfortable with being thanked for their military service. I mean, I thank my fellow vets all the time just because it's kind of become a common thing to say to veterans. That's very civil, and it ought to be said. I mean, I'm glad people say it, but the truth is most of us joined, certainly my generation, I joined in 1983. I was joining to run away from home and do something that was different and more adventurous than what my friends were doing, which was, you know, working at the factory or going to community college. So, you know, my motivation to join, and certainly things, unlike a lot of people like my sons who joined after 9/11 because they wanted to go deploy and do their part, you know, the motivation factor is an important thought, because I almost believe that you set yourself up for failure if you only join for idealistic reasons. You know, if you only join thinking you're going to solve the world's problems, you know, I think we've learned that, you know, we go and we do our part, and that's all we can do. But we're not going to save the world because, you know, the day we walk into a recruiter's office. And we shouldn't think that way, that's for sure.
Well, even people that maybe walked into the recruiter's office with that idealistic, I'm going to save the world thing, I mean, that's noble. But I think that once you get there, once you get downrange, you realize pretty quickly that all of the geopolitics and whatever else is going on behind the action that you've been called to support or defend, it becomes about just the guy next to you. The brotherhood and camaraderie that exists in military service in general, but especially downrange, it's a relationship intensity that it's hard to rival outside of marriage, to be honest with you. And so it's very intense. And I agree, you know, with what was said that, you know, like any organization, there's bad apples, and there's certainly plenty of those in the military. I do think that if you spend 20 years in the military or 20 years in most big corporations, in the military you're going to experience a lot less of that, not because there's not good and bad people that gravitate to everything, but because it does weed itself out, as you pointed out, in fairly short order. It's difficult, especially our military now being at war continually for, you know, a decade and a half. It's really hard for the bad apples to function for a long period of time in the heat of multiple deployments. And I mean, it becomes something that it is service. I mean, it's a life of service, service to your brother, service to your country, service to your community, right, your family. And people that don't want to serve eventually either weed themselves out or get discovered for what they are and wind up leaving. But
well, so one of the, we got about several more questions left and then a little bit of time, so I'll try to get to we'll just try to get to them. David from Ben Wheeler, Texas asks, how do you handle fear? David, thank you so much for your question. Gentlemen?
You think the question is how we individually
handle
fear
you
in combat, or how it's handled in our fiction?
He didn't specify. He just says, how do you handle fear? So I'm assuming he's coming from perhaps a personal stance.
I got you. I'm just clarifying the question so I can tee him up to answer.
No problem. That's right. Well, I'm gonna pick on Tim. Tim, how do you handle fear?
Well, when I joined the Army, I was afraid of heights, and I'm still afraid of heights. And I jumped out of airplanes, and I climbed mountains, and I jumped out of helicopters. So, to me, even before I gave my life to Christ, I had this idea of a transcendent purpose of, you know, I don't want to be a coward. I don't want to fail people in this organization. I don't want to, and I have to believe somewhere that there's a God that cares about me. And so
right.
I learned to pray, and I learned to you know, play the man when I was with the guys, and I did that and got me through a lot of very frightening things. I haven't had the pleasure, and I'd say that sarcastically, of being in a firefight, and I don't miss it. As an intel guy, I had a very different experience in the military than some of these guys. But I will tell you that that I think that sense of transcendence and that sense of not wanting to let people down is what causes you to function when you're afraid. That's the best that I can think of to answer that.
Amen. Amen. I like that. And then our other question we got was, Emily from Facebook, she says, did your service affect how you write, and if so, how? I think you may have touched on this, but just in case someone wants to put the cherry on top of the cupcake, we'll have Jeff go at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the simple answer obviously is yes, but I think that it's because every experience that you as a human being have, if you're a writer, affects how you write.
Right.
Wartime military experience is a very intense thing that informs how you write, but that doesn't mean you're only writing military thrillers. You know, I've written other types of works, and my military experience informs that too. So, I mean, I think that it informs your what you write about the human condition, how people react in various situations, how people react with one another, relational things. I think it affects absolutely everything, but I don't think it affects it any more than any other experience in my life. Being married to the perfect spouse that God chose for me informs how I write relationships. My children inform how I write children and those relationships. So absolutely yes, but I don't think any more or less than anything else.
Good answer.
Yep,
sounds
absolutely.
Good to me. Sounds good to me. And then Brenda from Facebook also says, how has your service changed the way you see fiction? And again, I'm going to pick on Travis and have him answer that one.
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that I was, as a kid, you know, curious about war. Was like, my military service has changed how I see war. I understand it better. And so it's changed my views of fiction war. I think Tim or one of the, maybe Jeff mentioned, I can't remember who, Robert Heinlein, and I read that Starship Troopers as a kid and as a teenager, and I thought maybe, you know, this might be how things are, but I feel that Heinlein's portrayal of war is very different from some others, and he's really pretty enthusiastic about the subject more than I am, for sure. So that's something that came out of being in war or being around war, that I lost some the gung-ho. Oh, I had kind of a pendulum, actually, in my thoughts about war. But anyway, but this the idea that war is so awesome. Heinlein had a little bit of that, and I just can't buy that 100% because of my own time involved with war.
You know, you mentioned that, and I'm actually remembering an old movie with Andy Griffin in it called No Time for Sergeants, and it was a movie about this bumbling bumpkin from the country who gets into the infantry, you know. And, of course, it's during World War II, so, you know, they're pushing a lot of war movies and stuff like that. And they put a humorous side to the movie because so many of them were, like, dramas and everything like that. It talked about basic training and things of that nature. And I think sometimes we get focused, like Tim said, on the Eagle Scout of War, that we forget that there's a darker side to it. And then we get so caught up in the darker side of it that we forget there's a vulnerability attached to it. And then we get so caught up into the tech, we forget there are people who have to actually shoot the gun. You know, and just a lot of different things that's going on. I know our panel has been just absolutely phenomenal answering our supporters' questions today. I'm going to read these two questions. We've already touched on them, but I just want to make sure our listeners know that we did address their questions. So Kessie from Mesa, Arizona asks, what do you see authors get wrong most often? And Kessie, we did answer that question, so you can always listen to the broadcast a little later and get the answers to that. And then Rachel from Facebook says this, probably seeing things about the feelings they feel in the heat of battle or what they feel right after they've killed someone, because it'd be helpful to know for accurate book writing, but I feel like that would be inappropriate to ask. And Rachel, thank you so much for that. And one thing I did tell our gentleman beforehand, because we don't know what all their service detailed, they could be as transparent as they wanted to be. And so did any of you want to answer that particular question, or you just want to say, you know, just leave it alone or pass on that? It's totally up to you.
I don't think it's a question that can be answered in a way that could be understood.
Sure. And so I want to thank all of you for being with us today. We got about 5 minutes. I want to get an opportunity for everyone, if they want to follow you online or connect with you or anything, I want us to have the opportunity to do that. So let's start with Tim Monahan. Tim, where are you online, and how can we get in contact with you if we have a question?
Sure. I've got a author Facebook page, Tim Monahan Author, both of my books are also on Facebook. They've got their own pages, Prodigal Avenger and No Greater Love. And then my regular website is overcomersarmy.com, overcomersarmy.com.
And then, Jeff, how can we get in contact with you?
Well, people that want to, actually, they can send me messages even through the WarTorn website, which is www.wartornnovel.com. You can learn about the book, but also the things we're trying to do with the book to support men's military ministries across the country. And I can always be found at andrews-wilson.com as well for all the other works that I do.
And Travis, take it all home.
The best way is, the books, the stories I publish, would be bearpublications.com. I also have Amazon author page and Facebook stuff you can find me at. I do a blog, Travis's Big Idea, where I write about story ideas that tend to be speculative.
You know, I got to ask Peter, because I want Peter to kind of sum a lot of what he listened to this for, because Peter is listening all the way from Australia. And Peter, I want you kind of just sum up, you know, if you listen to these gentlemen, you've read their books, you know them via Facebook or social media, now you had a chance to listen to them and talk to them. What has been your takeaway from this conversation?
My take is that these guys are men of integrity. You're genuine. You've got your flaws like the rest of us, but there's a great transparency among all that. You show that in your novels, in the conversation you've had today. I also pick up that you're committed and willing to place God first in your duty as soldiers and also in the writing of your novels. And I think that is going to be the thing that shines out to readers. It makes it real for them. The characters are real. You guys are real. And that is very, very appealing. And that is, I think, what's going to make it successful for you as authors and for you to continue in your chosen field in placing God first and each other first as well. And I thank you for all that, because this has been a great forum for this discussion. And I'm glad we did it. And I thank you very much. And I thank you too, Parker.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks,
that
Peter.
That was awesome, Peter. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much.
I'm thankful for all our guests today. You know, again, I'm going to go down a roster here. We have Peter Younghusband from Christian Speculative Fiction Review Guru. He's also an advisor to PJC Media for the Right Stuff Radio Show. He's the one who brought all these gentlemen here today. We have Travis Perry, who is also an author and publisher. He writes a lot of short stories, but he also publishes anthologies in a unique way. For those of you who want to get a taste of some of what Travis does, you definitely want to read Medieval Mars, which is a fantastic anthology about, I think, 10 authors, maybe a little bit more, but about 10 authors, and that's Medieval Mars. That's a taste of Travis you want. We want to thank Jeff for being with us. He has been on active duty. He's toured twice. He's been a combat surgeon and so much more. His faith-based book, War Torn, is available for you to read, which also gets a high grade from Peter Younghusband, and you can find him online. And then Tim Monahan, he's supposedly, quote-unquote, the amateur of the group, but his book got high accolades from Peter as well, and that is No Greater Love, an Afghan memoir. All these gentlemen have worked in the armed forces in some capacity, and then once again, despite the fact you may not want to hear it, gentlemen, thank you so much for your service, whatever you did. Thank you for allowing me to showcase you on the Right Stuff. Thank you for what you do. what you have done for our fiction. Thank you for answering the questions of our author friends. Thank you for just being open and transparent about what it means to be a soldier, both for our military in the real world and then for the spiritual world as soldiers for Christ, because at the end of the day, you're just soldiers saved by grace like the rest of us are. So thank you so much
Amen.
For being with
thank
us
you,
today
Parker.
On the show. And I want to thank for our listeners here, because we definitely wanted to showcase our author friends. We definitely want to showcase them because we want to let people know that we care about what our veterans do for our country. And it's even unique that all these people that we had, Tim, Travis, and Jeff, along with Peter, they write fiction based off their experience being in the armed forces. I always encourage you, as the Queen of Tuesday Nights, that what are you doing with the writing talent that God gave you? Do you have a story to tell? Were you in the armed forces? Did you do something that you think we need to know about, that you want to break away from and let people know, hey, this is what it's really like. Don't believe the rhetoric that you see on television. Here's what really happened. Here's the best thing about it. The Lord brought me through it. What are you doing with your writing talent? I want you to pick up the pen and go ahead and write stuff. Thank you so much for joining me for this special edition of the Write Stuff at Veterans Day Pattern. Happy Veterans Day to all our veterans out there. And once again, thank you for your service. I'll see you Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at parkerjcole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.